This is Leo Babeau for KTWH 99.5 FM, ktwh.org online, and I'm doing what's becoming a semi-regular visit this morning with BJ Kolstad. And BJ is our Lake County Emergency Manager, and she's wearing a lot of different titles, perhaps at times, at least as in terms of membership on entities such as the Lake County Public Health Response Team. BJ, that's probably a group that's meeting quite regularly. I think you said it was weekly now, and you just met yesterday. If we're recording this on Tuesday, what's the lay of the land? What are the concerns of the team and progress made towards preparing Lake County for COVID-19? Because really, we still have no confirmed case identified by the Minnesota Department of Health.
That's true that we don't have any confirmed cases. I think we all know that that COVID is widespread and it's probably in Lake County. And the reason that we don't have any confirmed cases are because up until this point, we've been sorely limited on testing capability, and that's been true all around the state. Currently, the MDH, Minnesota Department of Health, has released some more testing supplies and has then relaxed their requirements for who can be tested. Previously, it was only people who showed symptoms and only people who were healthcare workers or hospitalized or in congregate care facilities. And now they've said that anyone with symptoms of COVID can be tested. So we do have a couple of, one testing site in Lake County at Lakeview Memorial Hospital and Clinic in Two Harbors. And then if you live in the Fall Lake area, some of our residents do, their closest testing clinic would be in St. Louis County at the clinic in Tower.
And BJ, maybe this is a question more apt for our hospital personnel, but would people who have reported symptoms be still being triaged such that if they thought that they had had a mild case and they were in recovery, they might not really qualify yet?
If they have symptoms, they would qualify. However, okay, we do not yet have the serology test to find out if people have had COVID and recovered and still have antibodies.
Right.
That test is yet coming. The test that we have right now is to test people who currently have the active virus.
And so question would be, if people think they're experiencing a mild case and think that they're already on the mend, they might defer, thinking there are people that need the test more than them if the tests are in very short supply.
They might, but we do have more tests now, and we'd encourage people with symptoms, even if they're mild, to find out if they should be tested and to request to be tested. The state of Minnesota has developed an online dashboard. If you search for it just by writing in Minnesota COVID dashboard, you will get there. And that's an amalgamation from a lot of state agencies, Minnesota Department of Health, Homeland Security, Emergency Management, Economic Development, Labor and Industry, et cetera. And one of the menu items on there is if you are sick. And if you click on that, it has a free online screening tool that just asks you a few questions, and that helps you determine whether you are eligible and or should be requesting testing or not.
Excellent to know about that. Thank you, BJ. Mm-hmm. I think we all know by now that last week Governor Walz continued from the stay-at-home orders that initially went into effect on March 27th. They were extended through the end of May 17th, essentially May 18th. But in doing so, he also again opened up some more business opportunities for businesses that could operate with, for instance, curbside pickup. So we continue to see more Minnesotans back at work, more modifications, and more people still really concerned about, in quotes, this is, you know, opening up the economy in the state. So in the face of that, though, whether or not it's predicated on there being more tests of late, we still have kind of maxed out at about 4,000 tests a day in the state over the weekend, and just yesterday it was just 2,000. We aren't really doing that full-scale testing that the governor referred to. I can't remember. Was it called the moonshot, perhaps?
Mm-hmm. But Minnesota moonshot, I've heard of that.
Yeah, but we are seeing an increasing number of cases each day, and the number of deaths, for instance, yesterday was about as high as it's been. So without more testing, it's producing some concern about the rate at which we open up and where we go from where we are now in a stay-at-home to what happens on March 18th and beyond. Are you getting any information that leads you to believe that the testing will rapidly ramp up in the coming week or two, and if not, when?
Yeah, I know that the moonshot that the governor referenced, the Minnesota moonshot, was to increase our testing capability to 20,000 people per day. And you're right, we're not there yet. We're still working on increasing to that point. So he's reluctant to, you know, completely open up the economy and take off the stay-at-home order until we get to that point, because we all kind of acknowledge that testing is is an important capability in order to target where these outbreaks are and help with contact tracing and to try to confine the impact. But you're right, we're still going up, we're still climbing that curve, and that's important for people to know that this isn't over yet. This is our expected, this is the curve that we're expecting to climb up, and they have the different forms of modeling that they use to estimate when this peak of the curve will be and how many infections and deaths might take place there. So I know that the governor and MDH and the state agencies are all working very hard with these models to try to, I don't want to say predict because that's too strong. We all know they're estimates with a lot of variability, but to try to understand how we should be, when and how we should be relaxing these stay-at-home and social distancing mitigation strategies.
Yeah, and the pressure point I see is that great deal of attention by the members of the cabinet, governor himself is the head of his health department, in really analyzing those models. But are they able to bring the pressure to bear and really get those resources for testing when they need them, when their anticipation of cases rising is predicating that they need more data? If we're going to do contact tracing, for instance, we need to have enough tests to have enough tracing to be done.
You're absolutely right, and I think that's their concern as well. So I can't speak to what the governor's plans are and how he makes all of his decisions with the other agencies, but I know that those are the things they're considering when they look at the model, and the model hasn't changed for a little while. They are looking for more data, and so I understand that, you know, next week they're going to update the model again, and maybe that will change things.
We primarily then talking about that University of Minnesota model?
We are. I know that some people are aware of another model. I forgot the initials, but it's one that comes out of Washington based upon the first outbreak in the United States. And the models are slightly different, but the governor and his agencies are using the one that MDH and the University of Minnesota developed because it uses Minnesota data rather than national data.
Indeed. And you may have heard that there's been an upward tick in what that model was. I don't know what the proper term was. They ran the model again with current data and are projecting, at least on a nationwide basis, greater penetration, spread of the disease, and more deaths through the summer. And that's not necessarily encouraging news, and we'll wait to see what the University of Minnesota model tells us.
Yeah, that is the same model, the one that you're talking about, which increase the uptick in contagion and deaths. That is the Minnesota MDH and Minnesota University of Minnesota model. And it does show that currently, and of course this is again just an estimate, it changes all the time, but currently they're expecting kind of a rounded peak, which is a good thing. It's about a 5-week peak centered around July, maybe starting end of June and creeping up through July and ending early August. And that could change, but that's what they're predicting now, and the average number of deaths that the models are showing is about 22,000 deaths in Minnesota. And curve, the more we can flatten it out, reduces the number of deaths per day at the peak in that peak period. But they're assuming that about half of those deaths, or 11,000, would occur during that 5-week peak. So that's the big struggle and the goal that the governor and his agencies are trying to slow this through our mitigation strategies enough to keep that peak below the level of hospital resources, including intensive care beds and ventilators. So when you look at just the total number of infections, flattening the curve is not necessarily going to reduce the number of infections. It spreads it out over time. But what it does is reduce the number of deaths from this, because if we can keep that curve below the straight line level of hospital resources, then that will greatly reduce the number of deaths compared to if we didn't do that and the peak reached above those hospital resources, so that more people were requiring ventilators and hospital beds than we had.
So, BJ, if you can take a look into the future, I know that's a pretty tenuous thing to ask anyone to do, but we're probably facing a period in which we will see more opportunity for social distancing to be harder to check, to monitor, because we'll be having more economic activity. And if the stay-at-home order becomes something less restrictive, we'll see more people in the public sphere altogether. And that just means that we'll be more likely to come closer to fellow humans. And if that's happening at a period where there's more of a potential for community spread because the virus is penetrating into more communities, what tools do we have? What recommendations can we muster to help us mitigate the spread?
Yeah, you're right, Leo. Here's the thing. We all know that if our primary, if our only goal is to reduce the spread of this contagion, then certainly keeping us all at home for until we get a vaccine is the way to go. But I think the government agencies that are making these decisions also have to take into account, as you know, the economic impact, the social impact, the physical impact, the emotional, all those things, and especially trying to keep our economy sustainable, because we will have to return to it. We will look forward to returning to it someday. So the way he's doing that, and to answer your questions about how we can mitigate that closer exposure to people as we open up the economy, is, for example, on last week, the governor, as you said, extended his stay-at-home order until May 18th, but he also opened up commerce to non-essential businesses who can provide retail with curbside or delivery, but only if they create what he called a COVID preparedness plan, which includes things like, what are their infection prevention measures? Are they going to wear masks, for example, and use social distancing? How are they going to identify and isolate sick persons? This might mean giving a small survey or taking temperatures of employees and visitors who come into their facilities. What are their engineering controls? Like, are they going to put up the plexiglass barriers that you've seen, or markers on the floor to say keep people 6 feet apart from one another while they're waiting in line? The fourth thing on there is housekeeping and cleaning. How are they going to disinfect and decontaminate their surfaces? And the fifth thing is, what's their communication plan for training managers and workers to try to implement this plan and then monitor it to see if it's effective? So all those things should help us. The governor and his agencies are hoping to open the economy a little bit at a time while maintaining these controls or social distancing mitigation strategies so that they cannot basically see this explosion of the second wave that you've heard about of this pandemic.
So that appears to be relying on, and I don't know how voluntary versus mandatory and bureaucratically reviewed the business planning on the ground for those businesses reopening. But it seems to me it's going to require both internal, in-house, in each business, collaboration and thought and attention to detail and diligence, but it's also we're going to want cooperation from the public that is served by those businesses. Uh-huh. For instance, if everybody in that business is wearing a mask and nobody who comes to shop there is masked, and uh-huh. and then people get too close together, we wind up having some kind of disconnect. It's sort of like the plan is slipping a bit. I'm just wondering if you have any comments on the way in which the rollout of the masks that have been collected by many different partners in the community and distributed to folks, and that folks have initially were wearing to the grocery store in pretty high percentages. And I'm concerned if my observation, which is only anecdotal, is kind of representative of what's going on. We seem to have already peaked out in terms of the number of people masked that I see in public. And I'm wondering if you have any comment, any recommendations to people about how to view the use of those masks.
Well, I can tell you that I don't have any anecdotal evidence because I haven't been out very much to see whether the number of masks is increasing or decreasing. However, I have heard some anecdotal stories about it. And I think what might answer some of your questions is, number one, these business plans do have to be submitted and approved by the state.
Okay.
Number two, businesses can make their own guidelines and enforce in whatever ways they choose their guidelines. For example, if a business says, we want all of our customers to wear masks, and they don't, and a customer comes in without a mask, they can choose to hand them a mask, or they can choose to say, I'm sorry, you need to, wait and do the curbside thing or whatever.
Yes.
And the third thing is that there is some enforcement teeth behind this order, as there is in all of the orders. Most of these orders have a little clause at the end that says violation is a misdemeanor and can be charged. However, the governor is encouraging his law enforcement agencies to primarily focus on education rather than enforcement. One of the reasons for that, we could fine people, but we don't want to necessarily put them in jail for misdemeanors because we're trying to keep people out of congregate living facilities,
right,
like jails.
Right.
And the last thing is that his most recent order, which was 2048 on April 30th, he opened more businesses with these plans, but he also said that licensed businesses like bars and large social gathering places are not open yet. And I recently heard it clarified that, how can we enforce these things if some of the local drinking establishments, for example, said that they were going to open anyway. And the point is that those establishments are licensed. They're not just retail stores, but they are licensed, and so they could have their licenses revoked. And that's something that I understand is being encouraged or held up as an option for law enforcement.
I see. My brief editorial comment is that until such time as I hear that there's a really deleterious side to wearing that mask when social distancing is being harder and harder to keep up, it seems like a positive thing to do, if nothing else, to remind us that we're still in the midst of a period of very serious hazard to our public health.
Sure, it absolutely is the best thing to do. That's what the CDC is saying, and the governor is strongly encouraging people to wear masks, especially, you know, we see people, he's also encouraging people to go outside and play, recreate, you know, for peace of mind and physical activity, and he's saying that you don't necessarily have to wear a mask if there's nobody around when you're outside in the woods or on the trails, but certainly if you are in a situation like going into a grocery store or a retail store or any place where you're going to be within 6 feet of other people, then certainly he's strongly encouraging us to wear masks at those times.
Thanks for helping me unmask this issue a bit, because I was sat in on a chamber Zoom meeting, and certain members of the chamber were saying that they would only reopen if all of their customers were going to be wearing masks. And I thought that people should know that that's the seriousness with which some of our business leaders take this concern.
It's true. And I think most places that are putting that guideline or restriction in effect are either, most of them that I've heard about are offering masks to people who don't have them when they walk in.
Great. BJ, I thank you very much. Is there anything else on the horizon that we should be keeping an eye out for?
On the horizon. Well, I guess on the horizon, we want people to know that this is not over yet. And there is, I am getting the sense that some people are experiencing what I call disaster fatigue, which means they're getting tired of these restrictions and being locked up in their homes and encouraging to wear masks. So I think it's important for people to know, as you said, Leo, that this is not over yet. In fact, we are still climbing the peak. We are expecting more cases, and we are expecting the rate of them to go up. We also are expecting that there will be a second peak or surge once we relax these social distancing measures, and that's why we're trying to relax them slowly to try to build up what you've heard of called herd immunity, where enough of us have had this disease with mild or minor symptoms and hopefully then some immunity so that it won't be so easy to pass from person to person. And lastly, based upon that disaster fatigue and the stresses of these situations, because we know that we're all impacted by this pandemic in some way, some of us are serving on the front line, some of us have lost a loved one to COVID or lost a job or our savings or just been affected by these restrictions. But so we'd recently put out a little article on our website that pointed out that our health is more than just physical. And if you go on the Lake County website, right on the front page, you will find a link to our support guide, which has information on all kinds of support, including mental and behavioral health, to try to keep us going strong and resilient during this episode.
Yeah, and it's a wonderful resource, and we're grateful to see it come out in our radio homepage at ktwh.org. It has a link. Look under Radio News, and you can check out the release and the link, this excellent kind of clearinghouse of information of where you might go for different kinds of resources for the different kinds of support that people need during this most interesting of times. And I think the fact that we're still seeing our peak ahead of us just is explained a little bit by the fact that we are such a large and diverse country that it's hitting all different sectors of the country in a different timeline. And it's just making this such a long-running emergency that, as you said, people are just wondering how can they get out from under this. And it's not a simple escape route.
We sure appreciate everyone who is complying with these and thinking about their neighbors as much as themselves.
Thank you so much for being with us, BJ. Hope to talk to you again soon.
You're welcome, Leo. Take care.
You take Bye-bye. Care, too. Bye now. BJ Kolstad, who is our Lake County Emergency Manager, and we'll keep talking to her about the course of this long-running emergency, the COVID-19 pandemic of 2020 and beyond. You're listening to KTWH.